If everybody could just get lunch if you want to eat. There's a box lunch up at the left there, and then let's get started in just a minute. Okay, everybody, it's 12:15, so if you could take your seats and let's get started, because I know we're on a bit of a time crunch. Okay, so welcome to the first CCNSO Review Working Party meeting. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Bryce. I work on the MSSI team, and I'll be supporting the review. You can see here on the screen the agenda. Just we want to keep this a very informal meeting, just meet one another. We'll go over the roles and responsibilities of the review working party, and we'll talk a little bit about what's coming up in the next couple of months and how we can get this review started. So I think, first of all, if we could just do a quick round-the-table introduction so we can get to know each other. So like I said, I'm Jennifer, and I'll pass off here to my left.
Thanks, Jennifer. I'm Larissa Gurnick, and I work with Jennifer and Nagar, who stepped out for a moment. And I just wanted to say thank you very much for agreeing to be a part of the review working party.
Good morning, Katrina Sataki, CCNSO.
Debbie Monahan, CCNSO.
Margarita Valdez, Nick Thiele, CCNSO.
Abdallah Omari, CCNSO.
Martin Boyle, also CCNSO, but here because of involvement with the Guidelines Review Committee of the CCNSO. Thanks.
Bart Boswinkle, CCNSO support staff.
Stephen Derhaek, CCNSO.
A remark, this is just a limited group because not all CCTLDs or representatives who are part of the working party are present in San Juan, that's where we are.
Yeah, thanks for that, Bart. And thanks, everybody. Really nice to meet you all. I'm looking forward to working together on this review. Also, many of you may or may not know, but our colleague Lars Hoffman, he's currently off on paternity leave, but I wanted to introduce him as well, and he'll be the director overseeing the review. He comes back in a couple weeks' time. Also, our colleague Angie Graves, who some of you may or may not know, and of course, we always have the secretariat support to help us with meeting logistics. So with that, let's move on then to the roles and responsibilities. There's a lot of information on this slide, and we'll be sharing it with you many more times in the future, I'm sure, but these are the four main bodies that will be involved in the review. Of course, yourselves, the review working party, the independent examiner once they get started in August. The OEC will provide oversight of the review, and ICANORG, which is, of course, MSSI, who will be facilitating the review process. So I think we'll just focus today on the review working party. You can see in bold the two items that are the most pressing, I suppose, the most immediate. Conduct the self-assessment, if applicable, which I believe has been already completed. So we're ahead of the game there, so that's excellent. And then the input to the review scope and independent examiner selection criteria. So we'll talk about this one a little bit more, but as you know, we'll need your input into both of those items. And then once we have your input, the scope and selection criteria needs to be approved by the OEC. Throughout the review working party will provide community outreach support. So that just means help us to connect with SOA AC groups and other networks that would be appropriate to help input to the review at various stages. For example, the survey, the interviews, the assessment report, the draft final report, public comment period. a really important point and responsibility of the review working party is to provide clarification and factual corrections throughout the review. It's really important that you help us and the independent examiner to get it right and provide input where you believe there may be a misunderstanding or factual incorrectness, I suppose. And we can talk about that a little bit more as well when we get to the two-stage process. And then, of course, the final responsibility is assess the feasibility of recommendations and provide the OEC with all the appropriate documentation when the time comes. And I know that is very far in advance. So we don't have to think about that one right now. Like I said, the priorities are, at the moment, getting the input to the scope and selection criteria, which will then go to the OEC for their approval. Meanwhile, we are behind the scenes in MSSI preparing the RFP and getting ready to get that launched, hopefully in April. Before I move on from this slide, does anybody have any questions or thoughts? Great. Okay. So, let's just talk quickly about the RFP process. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of the next steps when we leave this room today. As I mentioned, the RFP we hope to publish in April for having the independent examiner begin work in August. So, the bylaws, the time frame that we have for the bylaws is to get the review started by August, which means as long as we have the independent examiner beginning work by the 31st of August, then we're in line with that. So I know it seems like quite a bit of time between now and August, but actually you can see there's a few steps that we need to go through. So, of course, like I mentioned, we need your input into the selection criteria and the scope. So we'll be sharing with you in the coming weeks and looking forward to your input. I won't go through all of the steps on the slide, but please raise your hand or let me know if you have any questions about anything. But I've put bold around the first box and the last box because those are the times when we'll really need the input from the review working party. Throughout the rest of the process is actually it's a procurement process. It's not an MSSI process, but we will be obviously supporting that, and the review working party will receive updates throughout the entire process, of course. So just, I suppose the point to make here is that the OEC will confirm the selected candidate. We hope that will happen in June or July, which would give us some time to get the contract signed. And then we'll have our kickoff meeting, hopefully, in August. Anybody have any questions about the process or Larissa?
Just an observation. So we realize that August is probably not the most ideal time to get going with work. So this schedule allows us to get everything lined up and coordinated with the independent examiner so that once people are back to work, probably early September, concrete and specific work tasks can start happening and meetings and such. So we're aware of that. Also, just still, it's a long way till July, but as part of our normal process, once there is a confirmation of the independent examiner and the contractual negotiations have concluded, we will come back to the review working party. You will be the first ones to know who the selected examiner is. And then after that, we do the public announcement. Thanks, Jennifer.
One question. Thank you. So so the question is... So my understanding is that you select the candidate, the final candidate, and we do not know the entire process. The question is, if, for example, you inform us about the candidate you have selected, and we discover that for some reason there are some conflicts of interest or whatever that would put into, I don't know. You know what I mean. Yeah, the question is, what if we are not happy with the independent examiner you have selected?
Thanks for the question, Katrina. So a couple of things. We are seeking someone that is independent in the sense that they can be impartial to the process and do a review that's factual and not influenced by any personal or professional viewpoints that or any connections that they could have to this organization. So as part of our process, part of the procurement process, conflicts of interest, and particularly because this is a challenging task that we have. We're looking to find someone that has experience and knowledge of the organization, but yet is not conflicted in any way. So this has proved to be not easy, oftentimes. So we turn to guidance and on these matters to the Organizational Effectiveness Committee. But the process, so these kinds of things are sorted out during the RFP, the procurement process. So part of the application requires that the independent examiner provides all of their potential conflicts. And then we spend quite a bit of time discussing whether there is other perceived conflicts and such, and try to anticipate all of these kinds of things. So that is baked into the process. But to your second question, certainly if you have concerns about the independence, you would be free to raise them, and it probably would be appropriate to raise them. That's generally has not been the case if we do our jobs right. At least the perception and the obvious connections are known and resolved before we confirm the independent examiner. But if you're not happy with the selection, unfortunately, it is an independent process, so I'm not sure that there is a specific occasion for you to express that, but it just makes the importance of the selection criteria. So talking about it now to really hear from you, what are the skills, what are the understandings, what are the competencies that you think we need to be looking for so that we can select someone that has the right skills, the right information, the right experiences to properly do the job. And I'll give you an example. Within the at-large review, when we went through a similar process with them, what became very clear is having a sensitivity to the very diverse community that the at-large serves, different regional knowledge and connections was very important to them, so we added that into the selection criteria. That may not always be applicable to all organizations. In the case of some of the other reviews that are going on, for example, such as RSAC and SSAC, some technical understanding and knowledge was really important in those cases. So I would really encourage you to give us any of your thoughts and feedback, not just in what would make a good criteria, but maybe also what are the kinds of profiles that you don't want to see. You don't think it would be helpful to have people with a particular expertise. That's actually quite helpful as well.
Thanks, Larissa. Stephen, please.
So we have some input, if I understand you correctly, in terms of giving a short list of what the qualifications we think we need, besides having a knowledge of ICANN and being unbiased. What's the top three or four qualifications that you guys are looking for, and how do you find these people?
In terms of qualifications, we learn quite a bit from every experience, and we keep refining and expanding on the qualifications. Open-mindedness or emotional intelligence, if that term makes sense to you, is one that's turned out to be quite important, because it needs to be someone that can maintain their independence but also hear what the review working party and other parts of the community are saying. So open-mindedness and flexibility, not just to the concepts and ideas, but also to the way things work at ICANN. So from a timing perspective, we know that those kinds of things are important. It cannot be a very rigid approach, typically. So those are the kinds of non-technical skills that we look for, and especially someone that understands how to conduct a data-supported evaluation, because more than anything else, I think it's really important that when the independent examiner provides observations and findings, that you all can trust, not necessarily agree or like what they're telling you, but that there is a level of trust that the information was gathered in an objective and appropriate way. So experience with conducting those kinds of reviews and successful conclusion of those kinds of audits or performance evaluations or whatever they might be called in other spheres is something that we also look at, and being able to demonstrate that to our community.
Okay, any other questions or comments before we move on? Okay, thank you. So I wanted to give you a quick overview of the organizational review process, which has changed slightly since the new bylaws. So the review process is now in two phases, and you can see here a flowchart of all the steps that are taken throughout the review. So starting with once the independent examiner begins work in August, they obviously begin to perform the assessment. They do the interviews and the surveys and, you know, look at the documents, attend your meetings, whatever might help them to gather their data. The first phase is the assessment report phase. So at this stage, the independent examiner will share with the review working party an assessment report, which includes only their findings and no recommendations at this stage. And this is where the review working party will provide input to the draft assessment report. Of course, you know, the review is carried out by an independent examiner. The idea is not to say, oh, you know, we disagree with this, which of course you can say, but I think the main purpose is to make sure that we correct any factual mistakes at that stage. And of course, there'll be some discussions at that point back and forth with the review working party, the independent examiner, and ICANN.org to come to an agreement to where everybody's comfortable with the findings that are in the assessment report in terms of that they're factually based. That assessment report will then be published for public, it's a consultation rather than public comment period. It's a little less formal than the public comment process that you probably are all familiar with that ICANN.org usually uses. So we called it public engagement, I guess. So that will consist of a webinar or two to where the community can join and ask questions, provide their input. We'll also have a mailing list to where people can mail their comments, and that'll be a public mailing list, of course. And as I said, the purpose is, you know, to provide factual clarifications there. After the assessment report, the public consultation phase is completed, then the independent examiner will draft a draft final report. And at this stage, well, first of all, I guess I should say, if you're looking at the second big orange box there, the review working party provides input on recommendations. So the independent examiner will then provide their recommendations to the review working party. And again, that's a kind of first look for the review working party before the draft final report is published for public comment. And the draft final report will consist of the assessment report findings as well as the recommendations. So that goes through the public comment process, the formal process that you're familiar with. Of course, the IE will consider the public comments and the feedback before issuing the final report. So just to explain here, the orange boxes are, again, we wanted just to highlight where the review working party will find the heaviest, I guess, workload. Those are the times when you'll need to provide extra input, I guess, to the review. There's a couple of lighter shaded boxes where the review working party is involved. Again, heavier, but not so much as the bold orange boxes there. So I know that's a really quick overview, and I know there's a lot of information on this slide. But I hope that kind of helps to explain the two-phase approach. So there's now this assessment report that comes before the draft final report is published. Does anybody have any questions? Sure, please.
So I noticed that you've got drafts recommendations in consultation with the working party. And then the next one is provides input on recommendations. Is the intention that kind of we basically sound check that they're not going somewhere which is fundamentally wrong while they're developing the recommendations, and that's almost more informal versus then formally having a chance to comment on the recommendations?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Just a bit of context as to how we arrived at some of these concepts. On the first round of reviews, for example, reviews that took place some 5-8 years ago, there was not a review working party construct per se. So independent examiners went off, did their thing, submitted the report, and what was gathered is that that's not the most fruitful way to go through it, because oftentimes they may have misunderstood or misconstrued, and it wasn't until the very end that all of that needed to get rationalized, and then it was not a very effective process. So the whole purpose of having the review working party is to clarify those things as the work progresses, so that there's not a lot of waste of time and resources, going in a direction that's wrong or misunderstood or, out of scope perhaps, or, any of those considerations. So that feedback, your role as a review working party, that continuous feedback should not be construed as somehow stepping, impairing the independent process, because whatever feedback you provide, and especially if it's something that suggests that maybe the recommendation that they're considering is not useful, their obligation is to listen to you with an open mind and hear what you're saying and engage in a productive conversation. But ultimately, the independent examiner will make their own conclusions and recommendations. But the in-between, that feedback on the basis here that Jennifer walked through, is really important to make sure that at the end of the day, when the final report is published and they walk away, essentially, that we're left with recommendations that can be implemented, that are helpful and on point. And we have various other processes baked into this to make sure that we keep an eye on that.
Is this the same process that was used with the recently concluded ALAC review?
No. The two-phase process came out of, just to make a slight correction to Jennifer's introduction, it wasn't as a result of the bylaw changes. It was as a result of an observation from the at-large review. At-large review did not have this process. Since then, we've implemented this process. So the NOMCOM, RSAC, and SSAC are the reviews currently underway that are following this process.
Okay, that's good to hear, actually.
Thanks. All right, thanks for the clarification. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, unless anybody else has any further questions on that process. This slide here just basically assigns dates to what we just talked about, all the different phases of the review. So, the final report, the expectation is that it would be issued in August 2019. And as you can see here, the timeline begins once the start of the review will begin no later than August 31st, and then you can see between August and August all the stages there, as well as at the various ICAM meetings between now and then. We'll expect the independent examiner to be there and either be conducting interviews or providing the community with an update to how the review is going, presenting the assessment report, presenting the upcoming draft final report as well. So those will be open sessions. Does anybody have any questions? All right, so next steps for you all and for us. I guess the most important thing is to determine how often you're going to meet and when that next meeting might be. Obviously, we appreciate it's an exhausting week, so you might not want to meet next week. But I think it's important that we determine a regular schedule of calls. Maybe we don't have to do that today, but if we could at least get an indication of when might be a good time to have our next meeting. Because, as I mentioned before, we are currently in MSSI where we're putting together the scope and selection criteria draft, which we will then share to you. And we've been working with Bart a little bit on that as well, so we've had some input from him. But we'll be sharing this with you all and looking forward to your input on it. So I think a regular schedule of calls, maybe every 2 weeks, is what we would propose, and the call being, a 60-minute slot, which may or may not, you may not use all that time, but it might be helpful to have something blocked out in everybody's calendars that we can then cancel, if we feel we have nothing to talk about. But I just want to put that out there and get people's thoughts if anybody has any ideas or suggestions.
Good luck. It's generally one of the outliers from New Zealand. As soon as you've got Europe and New Zealand on the same call, trying to find a time is going to be very difficult. For a lot of our working groups, we actually rotate the time so that the pain's shared, or that people can attend at least 2 out of 3 rather than have them all either really work or not work. So give it a go, but I think if it, that's something to consider as well, because I don't mind certain. I mean, I'm on a number of different calls that start at 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm not very comfortable.
Thank you. I think that's a really fair comment. And perhaps what we can do then is, now we know who the review working party is made up of, we can put together a quick chart and see which time zones everybody is in, and then maybe propose a schedule of, a rotation of 6 hours or something. I'm seeing some nods of agreement, and I don't see any horrified faces. So we'll take that as a next step. And then just to reiterate that, the first session, we'd really like to hopefully share that document. There is, by the way, a mailing list that has been set up for the review working party, which everybody has been added to. It is a publicly archived list. There'll be the wiki page as well, which is where people can go to access the mailing list should they want to see what everybody's discussing. And so we can share the scope and selection criteria draft with you on that mailing list. And of course, we always encourage discussion on the mailing list as well, just to save people from joining the calls at, when we don't have to. So with that, I think that's all really I have to say. If anybody has any closing comments, they're very welcome. But thank you again for your time. Stephen, please.
Would it be useful for you guys to have from us a list of the calls and dates of the call, times of the calls and dates and what day of the week of the calls for scheduling purposes? I know some of us rotate. My working group on PDP retirement, we rotate every 8 hours, and we always chat on Thursday. There's also a prep call I have the week before. GRC, which is chaired by Katrina, always meets at, I guess now, 8 a.m. my time. Yay. As opposed to 7 Eastern during the winter. And nothing works well for Debbie, I think, except in the PDP. Occasionally she scores on the PDP. And I'm seeing some nods from further down the table. So if that's useful, we can provide you that information.
Thank you for that suggestion. And I think we can work probably with our policy colleagues. They might have that information to share with us.
So I wanted to also get your thoughts on even thinking beyond the scheduling of the calls. We already know that this is getting kicked off around August, and you know, you heard my observations about being mindful of vacation times and such. But if you can think of other times within the next year that are particularly challenging, that we should, you know, maybe know some time frames where your input would be really difficult for you because of other workload. And I understand that this is hard to predict, but if there's something that is already known where there's an event or some other deliverable that we should be aware of, certainly that would be really helpful to build into our early time frames, because when we go out with an RFP, we have an expectation that whoever responds can commit to do the work within that, you know, rough period of time. So we are always flexible to things that come out during the process, but also try to maintain some sort of a timeline that's reasonably close to what was published in the RFP.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for raising that, Larissa. That's important. Okay, so I think with that, we can close the session. Is everybody happy? Okay.
Happy. We just learned that we have a lot of work to do. Yeah, we're very happy, absolutely. Why wouldn't we be?
Well, may I ask a question before this is, I hope this we can speak informally. We understand that this is a lot of work. And we understand that you are coming at it. You are the last organization to be going through this review in this particular cycle. So maybe a bit of positive news in that is that we've adjusted the process and we've responded and reacted to other things that weren't working so well to get here. And one of those things is, and there's been a lot of discussions by Joran and Shireen this week about the impact of review and what's the benefit of the review. So I would just pose the question. We understand why, you know, we are making you go through this. It's a bylaws mandate and it's part of the accountability mechanisms. That's sort of, you know, our perspective. But it would be really great to hear from you, and maybe this is something could be discussed at the when everybody's together, is what would be a good outcome from your perspective and what would be not a good outcome from your perspective? What are the things that you're most concerned about, and what would be, recognizing that this is a lot of work and it's on top of everything else that you have to do, so that goes without saying, but what would be a happier or easier outcome, and what would be your kind of your concerns?
I don't know. I think we're great. And, of course, it's nice to hear it from somebody from outside the CCNS. So if they confirm how great we are, I think it would be excellent. Yeah.
Are you suggesting, Katrina, there's nothing to see here and just move along?
Yeah, and as I already suggested, that we just get those 250,000 tax-free in cash, and then we just go on with our daily business.
Solves the cocktail party problem. No, seriously though, I think we have some issues, and it'll be really interesting to see what a fresh pair of eyeballs will have to say about them.
I was going to say that that's why Katrina wanted a say in who actually did the review. I actually agree with Stephen. I think sometimes we've spent years looking internally. We don't kind of. And I think part of it's going to be how far the independent examiner, if you like, steps outside of the CCNSO and talks to other CCs. Why haven't they joined the CC? And so I think there's, and a lot of that's going to come out when we do the brief. So I think we'll get as much out of it as how good we are in defining what we want them to look at.
Yes, certainly I would agree with that point of understanding membership and what affects and impacts membership. And I think there's actually perhaps something a bit more fundamental there, and that is that the CCNSO has a very limited mandate. It's actually quite unusual in ICANN houses having identified quite a small area that respects the sovereignty of the different CCTLDs who are answerable in their own country, and therefore that has to be taken into account. I think anything that damages that very careful balance is something that has to be thought of very, very carefully, because I think there will be quite a number of CCs that would just get up and walk out if the role of ICANN in the internal affairs of CCTLDs was increased. So, you know, I think that would be the thing that needs to be avoided, so that you don't end up with a mission takeover, as it were. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much for your inputs. Are we ready to close? Does anybody else have final comments? Okay, great. Thanks, everyone, for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.